We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Ryan Recker, Overnight America, and time for...
Tell me something good.
Oh boy, could I use something good right about now? Oh, please. So if you got a good story or something that happened to you or something you witnessed or just a good feeling in general about something, 314-436-7900 is the number. You can call or text, or 800-925-1120. The very first story I wanted to bring up, this is a good story, but it leads me with some other questions, and you can find it at KMOX.com. So members of the Civil Progress and the Regional Business Council, whose companies represent 125 or so of the region's leading business here in St. Louis, announced $900,000 in new funding for community organizations working to improve public safety in the region. You know what the interesting part of this story is? I should have just said, you know, almost $1 million. They want to help public safety. They want to improve their community. They want to help people in the community. That's a great thing. The first thing I thought of is we're so poor here in St. Louis. We got so many money issues that we got to put the collection plate around for people to pay for public safety. So we have, it's almost like saying to ourselves, the only way we're going to be able to feel safe in downtown or any of the surrounding areas of St. Louis is if we almost privately pay for public safety. That's a shame. It shouldn't be like that. But again, it is a good thing that there's businesses that are stepping forward because they realize there's a benefit to this sort of thing. Organizations receiving funding today include $150,000 for the Urban League for the Save Our Sons program, $200,000 for STL Youth Jobs, $100,000 for the Better Family Life, which is a great organization, as well as donations to the Little Bit Foundation and the Northside Community School. Urban League Save Our Sons program targets at-risk youth African-American men. The program provides them with post-secondary education, job training, career skills, and work ethic. I think that's good. One of the best things you can do for a community is make sure they are prepared and can get jobs. If you could turn that around and make sure someone has the ability to provide for themselves and provide for their family without having to look at some sort of crime or something illegal to do that sort of thing, then all of a sudden they start building something up for themselves. It goes beyond just the pride of being able to support yourself and your family, but it goes to the point that you start building wealth and you start building something that you want to keep, which is whatever that is, independence, and that job will go a long way. So to me, that's how you turn around a lot of this crime. You know, people that have something to lose normally stay away from some of the terrible crimes we've seen in St. Louis. Like, let's look at the people that feel like they got to go and shoot and kill someone, or people that want to just violently confront someone with, you know, stabbings, or we got enough problems here in St. Louis. But what I'm saying is people that have something to live for and start building something up for themselves, think twice about those sort of things, and it starts to turn people's lives around. It is a good thing. So good for them. Good for the Urban League, and it's worth funding programs like that. Better Family Life Neighborhood Alliance Program places professional outreach workers and case managers in positions to serve individuals and families residing in neighborhoods under social distress. I've interviewed people from Better Family Life, and they're a great organization, too. They realize that there's a lot of specific needs in specific communities. They're the group, if you remember, will go around and they'll find a specific block in a neighborhood that needs help, and they'll dispatch and organize a lot of volunteers to show up on that block. And then they'll start saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to fix the houses that need better shingles, or we're going to help mow the lawn over here, or, you know, this tree needs to be brought down. We're going to do that. We're going to pick up all the trash. We're going to clean the gutters over here. We're going to help this person over here. And then we're going to make sure everyone in this community knows each other. So we're going to bring them together. So if there is a need, they feel comfortable going and asking one of their neighbors about it. That's what they do. And they organize these things. And that's just wonderful things. And I've talked to them about this. And they talk about, too, the importance of having a strong family life, which includes having a father in the lives of their children, which is something that a lot of people shy away from saying. It shouldn't be a controversial thing to say that a kid can benefit from having a father in his life. And we look at the crime statistic of what happens with some people when they say there was no father in their life. And things like that can be turned around very simply by supporting the family structure. And they do that. So these are really important programs for the 125 local businesses to contribute this money, put it together, get the collection plate going. It's so, so important. You can find this story at KMOX.com. They say, we are pleased to contribute resources that will help our community improve public safety. This is a priority issue for St. Louis. The organizations we are funding today are doing great work to support young people, their families, schools, and neighborhoods. And you can get a couple of other quotes there, too. But cheers to them. I just wanted to give them big kudos. Another Tell Me Something Good story. Maybe you have one and you can call in or text it. I'd love to see that at 314-436-7900. How about this story from the state of Illinois? I tried to find an article about this and I couldn't find it anywhere. It was a video that was posted on Facebook from Illinois Policy. It's a Facebook group that posts things that happen on their state floor. So if a senator or someone in the House or whatever it is from Illinois stand up and they try to propose something, they normally show the video and they'll live stream it, things like that. There was one Illinois senator that stood up and took the floor because he thought it would be important to bring up this very vital topic.
And thank you again. So this point is particularly relevant to the representative from Downers Grove. As you may recall, the gentleman recently passed a bill to protect cats and dogs or protect people from liability for saving cats and dogs from a hot car. After some intense questioning, the gentleman admitted that his bill did not address any other animal. Well, despite our concerns, just last week, a woman was arrested in South Carolina for leaving her pet squirrel in a hot car. Tragedy was averted, fortunately. The squirrel did live, and he will be returned to her after some time. But I think for Illinois, the representative from Downers Grove owes this body a trailer bill. I hope he's willing to do this. And I might suggest that he start with the National Uniform Treatment of Squirrels Act, commonly known as NUTS or NUTS. I don't think any of us want to have to come back and say, I told you so. And I appreciate the speaker allowing me this moment of levity in gently ribbing Mr. Olson, and I'm looking forward to a very productive committee deadline week.
I think that's hilarious. I propose that we put together our policy called NUTS, to save the squirrels. Isn't that something? You know, there's a text message that came in. I don't know who this is. Something good. Producer Mike's sister graduated on Saturday with her psych degree. Congratulations. Producer Mike didn't say any of that. Do you know who? Producer Mike. I know he's probably listening right now. He listens after he goes home. And you didn't say anything. This is a good thing. Congratulations to your sister. I know you've visited in the past in a psych degree, which means she might be able to fix you. You got a lot of problems up there. Yeah, she might be able to straighten you out a little bit. That'll be a good thing there, too. You know, with the Squirrel Act in Illinois, did you know, starting in July, you will no longer be able to bring your emotional support hedgehog onto American Airlines? Did you know that was a thing? Emotional support hedgehog, goats, even spiders. So house pets, for the most part, are subject to a fee if you're going to take them on American Airlines. Some people saw a loophole in saying, well, my goat is a support goat, so they get to ride for free. Well, federal regulations allow passengers to bring him on as therapy pets. They need to be documented, and unfortunately, people are falsifying these documents, so they have to put stronger type of rules in place to prevent people from bringing in the fake doctor's note that says their spider is a support spider because of the big fake rise in these controversial things. So a veteran flight attendant said, I can spot a fake emotional support animal a mile away. It's usually growling or barking at support animals. So apparently what is allowed is things like the dogs. Miniature horses are allowed because they have been proven to be fine service animals. But any animal that's unclean or has an odor, they don't do it. So there you go. Squirrels, not allowed, as far as I know. Support squirrels. You know, coming up later this hour, we're going to be speaking to Sohrab Amari. He's a senior writer for Commentary Magazine, and he had a great, great article about how the media is covering Israel right now. I want to play an interview from CBS with Benjamin Netanyahu coming up next, too, because they ask him a couple of questions, and I think they were really trying hard not to show a bias. They were asking some questions. In all fairness, you should be allowed to ask questions. But I thought the way he handled himself was great. We're going to do that coming up, too, on Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America, here we are, yet again. It's 1:20 in St. Louis. You know the crazy thing about all of this? People are going to be staying up this late to watch the royal wedding on Saturday. Hey, Tim from Arnold. What's going on, Tim?
Hey, what's going on? I'm glad to hear you're coming around on socialism.
Socialism? How so?
Well, you were talking about how good it was, that story of the businesses all coming together. I mean, I understand it's voluntary socialism.
Yeah, it is fun
to help the community.
It makes sense. It's a good investment for them to do that sort of thing because they realize that the city can't do it. So they're trying to protect themselves in the future and business. So, you know, it's good for them to do that. It's a charitable thing for them.
For sure, for sure. And I'm just, I mean, sure, it's voluntary. I mean, but, I mean, really, we live with socialism all the time. I mean, the police department, the fire department, that's all socialism. And, you know, I mean, we pay for it.
We pay for it with our tax money, sure. So why do you consider it socialism?
Isn't that what socialism is? Using tax dollars to help the people? Isn't that what we've always been talking about with it?
Well, kind of. You know, when we talk socialism, we talk about other things. So why do you associate it with the same thing that's happening in, like, let's say, Venezuela?
That's the thing people always bring up is Venezuela. You need to watch the John Oliver segment on HBO that just happened on Sunday.
Forget it. I know John Oliver. He's not my cup of tea. I've tried to watch some of his things.
I understand there's too much comedy, but that's how he gets the point out.
No,
that
but
comedy gets the points out to where there's a lot of corruption behind the things that are going on in Venezuela that got them the way they are.
Ton of corruption. And it started not just last year. It started years ago. And it's something that we should try to avoid. So tell me what the big hope of socialism is here. Like, what would you like to see happen in the United States?
For me, the only thing I would really like to see is a change in the health care, because that is the biggest thing that is crippling the people of this country, is not being able to get health care.
Okay, so what would we change in health care to make it better? What would socialism do to make it better here?
Well, I don't know if socialism would be right, but maybe regulations, which I know Republicans hate so much.
Like socialized medicine is what you would like?
Not necessarily socializing, but making it more, you know, cutting down on the pharmacies' big profits on the huge upcost that they make us pay for so-called research and development and all those other reasons that we have to pay way too much. Like I can't remember his name, the guy who had the Tupac CD that he sold for, so he had to give up for so much money. You know,
oh, the Martin Scorelli guy. Yeah, it was
the
insane clown posse or whatever put together. Or not ICE.
Yeah.
It was one of them like that.
Things like all the big farmers are like that. I mean, they make us pay way more than we have to because they can.
Okay, so that would change it with socialized medicine or, let's say, a single-payer system because why?
Well, I don't know. I don't understand the whole single-payer system and all of that stuff. I don't quite understand that. But changing the way healthcare works in America, you know, using tax dollars to maybe stop how much a doctor gets paid, you know, millions and millions of dollars per year. I mean, yeah, sure, they deserve so much, but not making the hospital have to pay for all these super great doctors the millions of dollars that they don't need, that they don't have to make that much. They got into the profession to help people, I assume. I mean, max them out at like $350,000 a year, $500,000 a year. I don't know. I mean, but that's where the socialism thing comes in, is making sure that you're not making profits go ahead of the health care of the people. And that's what I see in this country right now, is profits are more important than actually helping people.
Do you think the average doctor makes $1 million a year?
No, not average, but the ones that have been around a while and do all the good surgeries that we really need, the ones we really need, I hope they do. In this environment of capitalism and money is what makes the world go round.
So let me ask this question to you, because I'm trying to figure out where you stand on it. So let's say there is some sort of socialized medicine here in the United States, and you have a problem. So you would go to a hospital, and they would just treat you. You wouldn't pay anything. It would all be covered with your taxpayer money. Is that the way you want to see it?
From what I understand, if you really have a problem and you're taken by emergency to the hospital, they have to treat you no matter what anyway, whether you can or cannot pay. So
no, that's true. Yeah, they do that already.
So
yeah.
why not have a way of at least they're guaranteed some kind of payment for helping out somebody? You know, I mean, what if that person dies that they tried to do so much shit and then can't?
Thank you very much, Tim. Yeah, no, I get that. All right. No, I see what you're saying, and thank you very much for your call. But here's the problem. So when you have a system here in, like, the United States, so let's say we socialize anything. Let's say we have some sort of program where, like, the program is you can walk in and demand a service from someone because it's paid for by the government. So do you think you should be able to walk into a hospital, any doctor you want, and say, you are forced to treat me because that's the way it works now? Let's talk about how medical care works in some of these other countries. Have you seen people put together, like, let's say Canada? We'll just use our neighbors up north, because there's a lot of criticism from people that live there in Canada, because the time it takes for you to get the service is sometimes way too long. And it's not like you walk in, you demand it from a doctor who you make it sound like, it's my taxpayer money, I demand you do this right now. It doesn't really work like that. Or how about we look at something that's somewhat socialized here in the United States already, the VA system. So let's say we have promised our veterans that if they are approved, which they should be if they serve this country, we will take care of their medical issues. How have we, do you think we've maybe kept up our promises with the veterans here with the VA system, or do you think that we have let them down, or do you think the system by itself is so flawed that it needs to be fixed as well? If we were to tell all of the private hospitals and all of the private doctors that we need to start running things like the VA system here, and maybe the government will pay for you, or maybe we'll underfund it, what do you think would happen to the medical system here in the United States? So I think part of the problem with a lot of people is that it would be nice if we can do all these things for people. And you know what? The people that can't afford it, believe it or not, it happens, and they're allowed to get it. We had something, what would have been traumatic to the medical field, happen, was called Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Screwed a lot of things up. I don't think anyone would go back and say things got better after that legislation passed through and President Obama fixed health care like he said he was going to. Do you think the prices went up or down? Do you think the premiums went up or down? Do you think the deductibles went up or down? I know for some people it might have, but for a wide majority of people it did not. There's going to be winners and losers, and there's a lot more losers than winners in something like this. Okay. So maybe the best thing you can do is say, maybe we do a single-payer system, and you try to talk to your legislators in each individual state and say, let's try to do that here in this state. You know what would be great? Taxpayer money just pays for hospital bills for everyone here in the state. If you're a citizen, then you can get it. And this is the first thing they'll say to you. How do you plan on paying for it? And your answer is, So what are you going to do? You're just going to say maybe the best way to pay for it is increase the tax rate to 50% for everyone or something crazy like that. Okay. Put a proposal together. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you're going to pay for it, how it would work better than the VA system, and how it would be better to force the medical industry to do your bidding as opposed to the system that's already in place, or maybe trying to fix part of the problems in the system that's already there, which I think repealing and replacing Obamacare is the first step you need to do for that. The individual mandate, getting rid of this junk and maybe trying to actually stabilize this industry. All right, so there you go. Maybe that's a good answer for you, Tim. I hope that helps. Coming up, I want to look more into Israel, and I have some audio from Benjamin Netanyahu that I think is really important to play. CBS sat down and had an interview with him talking about what some of the media has been putting onto flashy headlines, as in, you know, where people in Israel and the forces there and the military there are just sitting there in towers with sniper rifles and shooting innocent civilians. And they make it sound like that the forces there are inhumane to the people that are trying to rush their borders. Keep in mind, let me give you a statistic. There's been about 40,000 people that have tried to break through their borders. 40,000. I'm not going to call them protesters because they're not peaceful. The Hamas is sneaking in there with them. Grenades, Molotov cocktails. Let's not forget their history of digging tunnels to try to get in to create acts of terror in their country. Let's not forget about the missile attacks that continue to happen. Let's not continue. All of these things go on. They're allowed to defend their borders. I fully believe that sort of thing. But the way the media portrays this is that this terrorist group, Hamas, is the victim, and it's nonsense. So CBS sat down with Benjamin Netanyahu and asked them some questions that would be based on the headlines you're seeing here in the United States. I want you to hear his response on this, and I hope this will shed some light onto why they're doing the things they're doing. This is Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now, senior writer for Commentary Magazine, Sohrab Ahmari. Thank you for coming on to Overnight America.
My pleasure.
You had a great piece, The Media War on Palestinian Agency, and you had that piece that came out maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, and it was an excellent look at the way media has portrayed what's going on when it comes to Israel celebrating 70 years, what's going on in Gaza, what's going on with Israel defending themselves. And the first question, the way that you've been looking at media's portrayal here in America about how they're looking at events there, it's always disappointing to see media's portrayal of Israel to begin with, because it hasn't necessarily been fair. But I think this has been particularly unfair to them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, the images were irresistible, as I argue in the piece. You have on the one hand Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump in Jerusalem celebrating the opening of the relocation of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And on the other hand, you have images of shootings at the barrier fence between southern Israel and the Gaza Strip, and obviously mostly or almost entirely of Israelis shooting Palestinian people who are rushing over. But the context of what's happening there, which is a concerted effort directed by Hamas and the Israeli security services, to be funded by the Iranian regime, to create this stunt, to have thousands of people rush the border and have Israel react, be forced to react, all that is lost. So in the media imagery, all you have is this simplistic comparison between while Bibi Netanyahu and Ivanka Trump were celebrating, poor unarmed Palestinian civilians were being blown to bits by Israeli forces. All the context of what's happening there, why are all these people rushing the border, how would any other government react, how would you, if you think the Israelis overreacted, how would you stop 2,000 people from attempting to break through your barrier fence? All of that is lost. All you get is this simple image of mass murder on one side and oblivious, you know, American elites and Israeli elites celebrating together.
And part of it is, too, it's almost like the history is completely ignored. They forget about all the attacks that happened previous to this, and they forget about the missiles. They forget about all the stabbings and the issues that they've had. And part of the problem, too, is that they make it sound like Hamas is not a thing or not a factor in something like this. And I was looking at some of the numbers, and I think it's 60-some people have died, but a wide majority, it's over 50 of them, were from Hamas directly. And then, unfortunately, there's some other people that were brought into this. And I hate when they use the Palestinians as pawns, as a way to use them as human shields, or a way to say, look at us, we're the victim here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said it exactly right, that the role of Hamas is almost entirely obscured in this. Look, if you just had a situation where you had a border protest, and Hamas wasn't the organization that it was, and there wasn't a history of terrorism that this organization brings with it, then you could say, why are the Israelis doing this? But you have to put the Israeli response in the context of, this is the latest iteration of Hamas attempts to violate Israeli sovereignty and commit terror on statutory proper Israel. So, for example, you have, in the past, you've had Hamas using most of the funding that it receives from the international community to dig tunnels that go from Gaza into Israel to send operatives into Israel. You've had the missile attacks, as you already alluded to. You've had the suicide bombing. You've had all of that, and the most recent strategy they've come up with are these, you know, 17th century style mass onrushing of thousands of people, which, you know, as the Washington Post quoted one of them, you know, what the newspaper asked, what do you hope to do when you get there? And the guy openly said, you know, kill people, throw stones. I don't know. We'll see what we can do. So this is not a peaceful protest. These aren't freedom riders. It's unfortunate that some of the people who have been shot were innocent, but for the most part, they're Hamas operatives, and they go in with the intent to harm. The fact that they can't do that, the fact that Israel is more capable and is able to shoot them, is no reproach against Israel. In other words, some of these people in the media, it seems they want, like, well, maybe if some Israelis had died too, then it'd be a fair fight. Well, that's the fact that Israelis are capable of defending themselves, and Jews are capable of defending themselves, is no reproach against the Jewish state. In fact, it exists because for so long Jews weren't able to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm. Senior writer for Commentary Magazine joining us here today, Sir Rob Amari. And why do you think media takes the approach they do when it comes to handling news stories like this? And some of the really, I think, irresponsible headlines that they put up on these articles.
I mean, I think a lot of reporters have liberal sympathies. That's just a fact. And then you apply that across the board. You know, and liberals tend to see things in terms of, well, who's stronger? Mm-hmm. The Israelis, in a very narrow frame, appear stronger because they have the superior military, they have the technology, they have the wealth. But I guess, as I said, that's a very narrow frame. If you widen it, you see that it's a tiny state encircled by hostile populations, threatened with destruction from the beginning by its neighbors, which is still held on. So it's, you know, the fact its technological advantages and its material wealth don't necessarily make it the wrongdoer or the party that should be blamed all the time. I think that's one factor. And then more recently, I think that the Trump factor, mm-hmm, compounds the existing bias against Israel. Namely, lots of the foreign policy establishment believes that Trump can do no right in the foreign policy arena, that this move to relocate the U.S. embassy was reckless and dangerous. And so the image of Israelis opening fire on Gaza as the relocation of the embassy happens is just catnip to reporters who and editors who can say, look, see, Trump's reckless move caused this. Well, sorry, this, you know, days of rage and Palestinians throwing Molotov cocktails and rushing borders and going on stabbing sprees and blowing themselves up, that's been going on for years, and any given day in Palestine is a day of rage. So this is nothing to do with Trump. It's not as if Palestinian politics were so gentle, so peace-loving before Trump came on the scene with his bluster. So I think those two factors combine in this case to create this very acutely biased coverage of this story.
Yeah, and when you look at organizations like Hamas and they're continuing to attack and they're doing these acts of terror, what bothers me the most is to think that Palestinians and, let's say, just regular civilians are getting caught up into something and they're bringing their young children to something like this to be put into harm's way, which really bothers me, because you hear about, you know, they try to stop the attacks in Israel with tear gas and they try to use some non-lethal ways. But unfortunately, you know, you have situations where kids inhale this sort of thing. And I think, who in their right mind would bring a kid to that if it wasn't for them trying to purposely use them as a pawn? And it really is terrible to me as a parent. I can't stand to look at things like that to begin with.
Absolutely. It's called Pallywood for a reason, right? Like Palestinian Hollywood. Unfortunately, it's built on these images, and it's a society. I mean, this really goes to the contrast between the values of what the two societies, the modern Jewish state versus the terrorist government of Hamas, what they value. You know, the Israelis do everything they can. You judge them, you say they overreact, whatever, but the idea is that the state feels bound to protect innocents, and it acts in order to protect its own citizens. On the other hand, you have a Hamas which is permanently in this aggrieved, revolutionary, anti-Israel mindset, and the propaganda they directed their own children. If you, for example, look at an organization called Memory, which is the Middle East Media Research Institute, where they compile thousands of hours of what's on Palestinian TV, and it's this constant, you know, of the type of Mickey Mouse character comes forward, but instead of, I don't know, whatever Mickey Mouse says in other countries, in Gazan television, Mickey Mouse says,
boys and girls, we're going to go commit jihad and kill lots of Jews, right? Mm. And so that's the mindset that I laugh, but it's so grim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the sort of civilizational difference between Israel and its enemies.
Yeah, it's something else. You're a senior writer at Commentary Magazine. How can people find your work?
Just go to www.commentarymagazine.com.
So, Rob Amari, you wrote that great article, The Media War on Palestinian Agency. Definitely, everyone that's listening, go check that out. Check out your other work. Thank you so much for coming on with us here on KMOX.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
He really does a great job. I think it's worth sharing that. I'm glad he joined us here. So, go check out that article, Commentary Magazine. All right. One last segment for this hour. We're going to look at an interview that CBS did with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. I'm going to play back what I think is important to point out, because for the most part, CBS, I think, does a much better job than ABC and NBC can do when it comes to coverage. But they're asking him some questions, which is fair to ask these questions. I want you to hear his response. And maybe if you are someone that looks at this and you see Israel defending themselves as a problem, maybe you'll think differently by the time you hear this next interview. Probably not, but I think it's worth sharing on Overnight America, KMOX. I'm glad he was able to join us there. You just heard Sohrab Amari, a senior writer for Commentary Magazine, on the Goodwill Guest Line. And Klavan had to go check out the Palestinian Mickey Mouse stuff. If you've never seen that before, go to YouTube. It's really sad. And the link that Klavan sent me, it was a live-action one. They actually have cartoons and things where they try to indoctrinate the kids. It makes you... It gives you goosebumps. It's scary. It's like, this is what they're doing. This is their culture. This is how they try to get the kids early. And it's sad. It's sad. No wonder why you see what you do. But Benjamin Netanyahu did a sit-down interview with CBS, and I thought he actually did a really good job. And I thought CBS, for the most part, here's the thing. When you have these catchy headlines and you have these reporters, for the most part, very liberal reporters, can't understand why Israel should be allowed to defend themselves. When they sit down with someone like Benjamin Netanyahu, I think they are kind of set back because they didn't realize how intelligent this person could bring the argument and the conversation to defend his country. I think they are surprised in the most part because they get a different impression than what they may be leading their viewers and listeners to. Here is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu defending his response to the Gaza attacks. Listen to this on CBS.
Looking back on yesterday, especially Gaza, anything you would have done differently?
Well, I wish that it wouldn't have happened at all. I mean, Hamas is pushing people with a view of a massive infiltration into Israel, openly declaring their goal is to destroy Israel. They're paying these people. So it's not the peaceful demonstration that you think about.
You say they're paying them to...
Yes.
To try to cross the border.
Hamas is paying these people who are coming there. They're pushing civilians, women...
CBS at this point are showing screenshots of people in pain, maybe. I don't want to call them protesters because protesters don't act this way. These are different scenes, but they're showing in their... doing this a lot in their news coverage. They'll show Ivanka Trump and the front of the new American embassy in Jerusalem, and then they'll immediately show something along the lines of someone hurt as part of them trying to make way or rush into Israel during this time. And that's what CBS is doing. Let me just say, when you're listening to this interview, it's not just two people sitting down. They keep showing these pretty horrifying pictures, you know, and like here's, for example, a guy holding a couple of crutches screaming in pain. Now, keep in mind, a lot of these times, these photos are staged, so it's hard to tell the authenticity of these things and if they're really portraying what's happening here. But it's important to note out, during their news coverage, this is the photo they decided to use.
Children into the line of fire with the view of getting casualties. We try to minimize casualties. They're trying to incur casualties in order to put pressure on Israel, which is horrible.
You say they want kids to die.
Yes.
Putting kids in the line of fire.
Yes.
Did your army go too far?
I don't know of any army who would do anything differently if you had to protect your border against people who say, we're going to destroy you and we're going to flood into your country. You try other means. You try all sorts of means. You try non-lethal means, and they don't work. So you're left with bad choices. It's a bad deal. You know, you try and you go for below the knee, and sometimes it doesn't work. And unfortunately, these things are avoidable. If Hamas had not pushed them there, then nothing would happen.
All right, so this is important to point out. So far, there's been about 40,000 demonstrators, okay? Hamas mixed in with Palestinians trying to incite this violence. They're showing up with Molotov cocktails. They're showing up with weapons. They're showing up with grenades. They're showing up with knives. They're showing up with all of these things, that even to the point where they're lighting kites on fire and hoping to put it over the border to start forest fires and things like that. When you have someone with deadly weapons, like, could you imagine on our own southern border, if people were showing up with grenades and the American army or the whatever would show up and retaliate and do nothing, saying we're not allowed to hurt someone that wants to throw a grenade at us, we're not allowed to retaliate, we're not allowed to defend ourselves. That's crazy talk. Now, keep in mind the very famous saying that happened when the Arab League met in Sudan and issued the infamous three no's: no peace with Israel, no recognition of Israel, no negotiations with Israel. That's what they're dealing with here. Listen to the next part of this interview with CBS, because I think it's very important how he answers this.
Your own army chief says that Gaza could be on the verge of collapse.
Hmm.
Could get even worse.
Yeah.
If that happens, what happens next? What do you do?
Well, first of all, let's understand why it's on the verge of collapse. Because the Palestinian Authority, which is in Judea Samaria, the West Bank, has stopped giving them money. The money that they normally gave them, they stopped giving them. So they're in a financial crisis. So having received less money and taking the money that they have to their terror machine and to the stuff that they were doing yesterday, that's why Gaza is in crisis.
Will you target Hamas leaders?
Okay.
At this point,
we don't think that anyone is immune if they dispatch terrorists to kill us.
Do you see yourself under any circumstance talking to Hamas?
Do you find yourself talking to Hamas under any circumstance? Now, keep in mind, this is the group that wants to eradicate the Jews off the planet.
As long as they seek our destruction, what am I going to talk about? I mean, if somebody said, could you talk to Al-Qaeda? Would you have discussions with bin Laden? About what?
I ask only because, again...
Good. Would you have discussions with Al-Qaeda? Seriously. Look, think of the way terrorism works. What are you going to do? You're going to sit down with them and change their mind? That's Benjamin Netanyahu. Excellent answer. I hope that sheds some light into what they're up against. It's Overnight America, KMO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.